Our first question comes from the line of Scott Davis, Barclays.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Hey, Scott.
Good morning.
It looks like most of the full-year margin expansion came from value gap. Can you talk more specifically about 4Q? The 120 basis points is a pretty big number. If there's a way to think of that in terms of value gap versus maybe mix or costs.
Sure. I'll give you both, actually, because I think it's helpful to look at the pieces. So, you said it in the fourth quarter, value gap was big. It was 80 basis points of the growth came from value gap. We had very strong pricing. We saw material deflation. And you can see that the changes in order pricing are flowing through into revenue. We had equipment service mix was a drag. As you know, that's been a drag all year long. It was 50 basis points, the same as what we've had for the total year, as we had higher revenues on equipment growth than on services. And also, the wind story, higher wind revenues at the lower margins has been a drag all year long. We offset that with two things. One, we did have the dispositions. That was about 60 basis points in the quarter. And we had strong productivity, which was 30 basis points in the quarter, as we offset the impact of the negative mix. So overall, 120 basis points. And for the year, it's really a similar story. Value gap was 20 basis points of that 30 basis points growth. We had a real drag on mix and other. That was in total 60 basis points. But we offset that with strong productivity. A lot of that is simplification. Our SG&A as a percent of revenue went down a full point. We have done a good job with costs, and we've got great programs in place that will help us as we go forward into 13, as you know. And the gains in total for the total year were about 7 basis points on the impact for the margins. So pretty good performance. The strength, really, value gap and productivity driving margin improvement both in the quarter and for the total year.
Okay, helpful, Keith. Thanks. And
yep.
Kind of stepping back to a little bit of a bigger picture question, the Avio deal seemed pretty interesting and for many reasons. But, when you think about taking a step backwards and, is this part of a bigger trend and an opportunity to start to buy in some of the supply partners that you have that, there's multiple positives that can come out of that, I guess, and, risk reduction and controlling intellectual property and things like that. I mean, is there other things out there that you can do that are similar to this type of transaction?
Scott, we did a couple, other joint ventures that you probably saw last year that enhanced our position in controls and fuel nozzles and additive manufacturing and things like that. We think Avio made a ton of sense just given the amount of GE content and things like that. I would say we don't have a bunch more on the drawing board, but what I would say is, we've got an incredible backlog and skyline of aircraft engines coming at us for the next 5 to 10 years, and we believe that actually being able to drive real productivity in the supply chain and innovation in the supply chain is, will likely be one of the real margin enhancers as we look at the aviation business in the next 3, 4, 5, 10 years. So it is part of a, bigger productivity play. I don't think there's necessarily things like Avio on the drawing board per se, but we continue to look at productive manufacturing of a well-identified backlog as being a major source of margin benefit for our investors going forward.
Helpful. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, guys. I'll pass it on.
Thanks, guys. Thanks,
Scott. Your next question comes from the line of Steve Tusa, J.P. Morgan.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, Steve.
Good morning, Steve.
The China growth of close to 20% remains pretty strong. Could you maybe talk about, what was above and below that average and, how you see that playing out in 2013? I mean, you guys have skated through the weakness there, pretty nicely.
So, Steve, I'd say the, we definitely saw China strengthen again at the end of the year. The big drivers of China continue to be healthcare and aviation, and we believe that the China momentum will likely continue into 2013. So, see, I don't know, Keith, do you want to?
Well, some Vs I'll give you. For the quarter, power and water had a big quarter. They were up over 30%. Healthcare had a big quarter, up 15%. And for the year, they were up over 20%. Aviation continues to be very important to us for the year. They're up 18%. There were some orders that we had pushed out of the third quarter, still pushed out of the fourth quarter. So we expect some more orders in aviation in China in the first quarter. So those three are really the strength, and we continue to see investments by the government in those industries, and we're benefiting from the move to gas in China a bit, the great emphasis on healthcare, and certainly on transportation with the aviation position we have.
And
I think there's a knock on Steve as well as China grows. You know, you see more activity in Africa and Brazil and places like that as well. So it has a knock on effect that's also positive.
How big is your China business going to be at year end now?
The revenue for the year was just a little under $6 billion in 12.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Great. And then one last question just on margins. I guess, you know, the value gap obviously is ramping here. I mean, that doesn't seem like that's lumpy. So, you know, you had your biggest quarter obviously in the fourth quarter, which means you should probably start the year with a pretty decent value gap in the first half. And then maybe if you talk about how those other, swing factors like mix, the other things you talked about in the bridge, progress as we move through, you know, first half 13, if there's anything lumpy that you need to call out, you know, that may impact the 70 basis points, you know, first half to second half type of thing.
You know, Steve, again, as I look at margins, I think value gap is pretty well dialed in. Structural cost, you know, what Keith talked about, SG&A as percentage of revenue, that should continue to get better. That's not; those two aren't necessarily lumpy. Service margins aren't really lumpy. That we continue to get good progress there. You know, my view is, you know, wind will be lumpy, right, as you think about how it plays through the balance of 2013. And the one that we don't really control so much is, you know, how mix goes through. So I'd say a lot of the levers should continue with pretty good progress. And the one that, you know, we'll manage as the year goes on is just the impact of, you know, there will be a 3-cent headwind in wind. We don't see that necessarily changing, and that's another thing to play through. But we feel confident in the 70 basis points for the year.
Thanks.
Yeah, we're not really giving quarterly margin guidance, but as Jeff said, for the year, based on those factors, we feel pretty confident. We have an internal plan that's above the 70. You know, we don't have any gains that are in the plan to get to that 70, and we've got some good momentum as we come out of the fourth quarter on the margin improvement.
Great, thanks a lot.
Thanks, yep. Steve.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeff Sprague, Vertical Research Partners.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, Jeff.
Jeff.
Hey, just looking for a little more color around orders. Just first, at a high level, you're calling the quarter flat at 11.8, but I see 12.5 last year in the quarter. What's going on there?
I think it's the energy recast and eliminations.
And I'm talking about service in particular, actually.
Yeah, that's what we have. We have a recast from some of the services went into equipment, I believe.
Okay.
And some came up to corporate. We'll get you the split. It's a little bit of a decoder ring. I don't have the details with me, Jeff.
Okay. And then just on the power related stuff. So power and water and aggregate price was down 20 bips, but I think you said, Keith, just trying to keep up with your thermal was up 1. Is that thermal number just equipment, or is that service? And can you provide any color on service pricing in the business?
Yeah, the number I gave was the total business, thermal and PGS, up 1 in the quarter. If you look at, I don't have a separate breakout for services for the fourth quarter. I have thermal and total.
Okay.
But if you look, you know, we've all year long, we've in thermal, it was positive in the first and second quarter. It was a little negative in the third quarter. It was positive. Total year is up 0.5 point for thermal equipment and service.
And then finally, flipping over to Aero. So the ADOR stabilized. Do you have visibility, you think, that the aftermarket's kind of found a bottom and inflecting, or is it early to kind of determine that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the way the team has talked to us about it and in the market, you know, you've continued to see pretty good revenue passenger miles. You know, freight declines were lumpy in 2012, but recovered a little bit at the end of the year. And for us to have flat ADORs, given that there was an awful lot of working capital management in the supply chain and some mix for us with the old CF6s on freight, was a positive sign. You know, right now the team is forecasting a little bit of improvement off of that fourth quarter rate in the first quarter. And, you know, we're going to have to see as we go through the quarter. It's too early in the quarter right now to know in a couple weeks in. But, you know, they're forecasting it will be improving over the fourth quarter levels.
And any concern about your Gen X productivity ramp with maybe things, you know, backing up at Boeing, if you've got any thought on how things might play there as it relates to you?
Well, you know, we're going to have to see. Right now we haven't had any schedule changes from them. Actually, as you know, if there are a few less engine shipments, that's not a bad thing in terms of margins, based on the margins on the initial Gen X shipments. So we had a great year on Gen X, Jeff. We came down the learning curve. Obviously, some of the pricing that you're seeing in aviation is coming through on Gen X. There was an improvement on margins per units in those shipments. So, you know, we don't anticipate it to be a big deal, but again, we got to see Boeing kind of work their way through the problem. Just a little number on our engines. You know, on the 1B, we've had 35,000 flight hours with 99.97 dispatch reliability. And on the 2B, on the 747, we have 310,000 flight hours with 99.94% dispatch reliability. I mean, the engine is performing very well in the fleet, and customers love it. So we got to work through Boeing, and we're trying to help them with whatever they're working through, and we will. But, you know, so far for us, you know, we're very pleased, and our customers are very pleased with the Gen X.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Your next question comes from the line of Andrew Obin, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch.
Yes. Good morning. A broader question. Given the resolution, partial resolution of the fiscal cliff, are you seeing any improvement in sentiment from your customers in the U.S.?
Well, I mean, I think there's certain tangible things like the production tax credit, you know, Andrew. So, you know, that basically opens up a two-year window. So I would say on balance, that's more positive. And we hear more positive comments coming out of the renewable energy sector. You know, other than that, Andrew, I wouldn't say that we're necessarily, picking up whether or not that's been liberating or not. You know, the shorter cycle business in GE is our appliance business. We get appliance market data every week. And, you know, the industry itself was about flat in December, and the industry itself is about flat through the first couple weeks of January, so if that's helpful.
Just a question on GE Capital. Do you think these ROIs are sustainable? Are you seeing more competition reentering the space, and any more color by segment on ROIs on new business? Thank you.
Yeah, it does vary. I think on some things, like asset-backed lending, we've seen some more competition. But in other places, we've had less competitors. Overall for CLL, you know, to do $14.5 billion in the Americas at a 2.4 in the quarter, you know, that's pretty good volume and, at a pretty good rate. So the team is being very disciplined on pricing and margin hurdles. So far we've been able to get the volume we wanted at the return hurdles that we've set. And, we expect to see that continue in 2013. I think we saw a little bit of a bubble in the fourth quarter from some of the fiscal cliff activity as people did a lot of refinancing and tried to get gains done, sales of their properties out in the quarter. But other than that, we've been pretty disciplined on pricing, and we expect it to continue to be reasonably good. Jeff, any comments on it?
All I would add is exactly what Keith said, is that some of this is our own discipline about where we're going to write business, and we've been exceptionally disciplined, and I think the fact that volume was pretty good in the quarter, kind of lets us get the sense that we're in the market and that our disciplines are appropriate.
And on asset quality, we've seen changes to consumer, we've seen changes to CLL. Any more policy changes down the line?
Well, those are the two that we're working through. I think we're significantly through the consumer as far as the segmentation. There may be a little more in the first quarter. And on the write-offs, this was there is regulatory guidance, and we are complying with it. I'm not aware of any others besides those two right now.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Deane Dray, Citi Research.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, Deane.
Hey, sticking with GE Capital, a question on provisions. It looked like it you absorbed at least a penny more than what we were looking for. But now that I look at the consumer delinquencies, they're at an 18-year low. So it raises the question. I know this is completely formulaic and it's out of your discretion, but when might we start seeing some releases of reserves?
Well, I don't anticipate that. I can tell you right now what we're basically, I think a simple rule of thumb to look at on the consumers, you're probably going to be looking at 12 months of reserves of provisions for losses in that book. You know, while we've seen delinquencies come down, and you're right, we have a tremendous asset quality there. It's the best we've seen, as you said. We have increased the segmentation of the portfolio to be more granular on different loss types, and that's added to provisions. You can see in the fourth quarter, provisions are up. Some of that's volume, and about $50-60 million after tax of that is additional segmentation on the reserves to get to the 12-month kind of proxy here for loss levels.
Great. And then can you comment on the MetLife Bank integration, any changes to the business model there? And a related question is, as you start increasing this alternative financing, alternative funding, you're expected to issue less commercial paper, and maybe that, you know, the aggregate amount of commercial paper coming down might actually give you better spreads, better financing, and maybe if you can comment on that as well.
Well, we're thrilled with getting MetLife closed, obviously. We've put it in the consumer bank. You know, the objective here is to grow our deposits online, and they give us a franchise and a capability to be able to do that. You know, our expectation is that we're not only going to do that in the consumer bank, but we're going to migrate that over to the commercial bank, and we're going to do more online deposits. As you said, our objective is to get the CP down in the 30s this year and continue to reduce CP, and we've been very successful at doing that, and we'll continue. I think, you know, you look at the trade-off of cost of deposits versus CP plus the bank lines and whatever backup cash you carry. You know, I think that this can be a good trade-off over time for us as we continue to diversify our funding.
But is it too early to quantify what the better spreads might be?
Yeah, I think you're not going to see that from, you know, I mean, CP is at, 20 basis points, Dean. So you're not going to see a big number on that in 2013 for G Capital. I think you will get a benefit from having less negative carry on the cash. You know, if you look at last year, we took the cash from, you know, $70-plus billion. We'll have it carry around somewhere between 50 and 60 this year. That'll probably be the biggest increase in sort of the financing margins. You know, last year we had net maturities of $48 billion reduction in G Capital. So it was a fantastic year for capital on a balance sheet basis to kind of lower the amount of debt and improve their future debt maturity profile. As you know, we go down to $30 to $35 million of long-term debt issuance a year now from a significantly higher level. So I think the capital team's done a great job, and the biggest benefit you'll see will probably be on a little less negative carry on the cash.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
Your next question comes from the line of Stephen Winoker, Sanford Bernstein.
Thanks. Good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Just first follow-up question to an earlier one. The question was around the order report today versus a year ago in the Q4 11 press release, and you talked about moving from services to equipment. If you look at the total, I'm still just trying to understand it, the total, I guess, a year ago was $28.6 billion in the press release, and this year it's $28.5, and you talk about just 2% increase. So when you look at the overall level, how much is it? Or how should I understand that? What's the gap?
Oh, the recast, the orders are basically flat. They're up $56 million ex wind and FX. 5%, sorry. They're up 5% ex wind and FX. So, you know, the recast, we put a little bit more in corporate out of the energy infrastructure recast, but I think it's insignificant.
Okay. All right. Fine. And then secondly, on Avio, just so I understand this, you know, they produce the gear system, obviously, for the GTF on the A320neo and the C-Series. I think they're pretty deeply involved in the development program, and you're also calling out $200 million of synergies. Just how are you thinking about how does that handle – how do you handle that going forward?
Well, you know, look, with – there are a ton of different developmental programs inside the industry that people work on together. You know, we do engines for Sikorsky. We buy from Goodrich and Hamilton Sunstrand. So there's always, I'd say, a certain amount of developmental work that goes on inside the industry. I think what was most appealing about Avio for us was really the amount of content they had of GE engines. You know, I think getting more control over our own supply chain, building capability, more reliability, you know, leveraging sourcing and manufacturing skills, things like that, that's really where we see Avio paying off for investors.
Okay, and then maybe just lastly, I guess aviation is now up to about half of the backlog. And as Boeing and Airbus orders start to decelerate at this point, is the thought that that backlog, that oil and gas, and do you see that backlog maintaining or now starting to come down as you start running it off a little bit and getting it into revenues?
Well, you're right. You're going to see, and we've talked about it the last 6 months, that, you know, with the aviation backlogs of 3 to 4 to 5 years of equipment, you know, you're going to see lumpiness in those orders. We feel great about the position, and obviously, as the Airbus and Boeing airframers increase their production run rates, we're going to continue to see volume growth, as you see in 11 to 12 and 12 to 13. We expect more commercial volume growth, but I'd expect the orders to be lumpy. The one offset to that is you're starting to see the LEAP MAX orders come in, and so that'll be an offset. As you know, there's been pretty good success in the marketplace from the 737 MAX. So.
Look, I think it's a great question. I don't think either Keith or I ever thought we'd have $210 billion of backlog in GE. But I would say in the kind of volatile environment we live in today, having that kind of visibility is actually quite a strong aspect. And, you know, maybe aviation tails off a little bit. But, you know, in oil and gas, you know, our orders in oil and gas are $500 million or $1 billion at a crack. So it's easy to see how that order rate might continue at the rate it's on today and add to the backlog.
Okay. And then, Jeff, you mentioned that you still expected 3-cent impact on when the tax credit extension obviously got moved into through 2013. So that's not changing your thinking about the end of the year?
You know, really, not yet. You know, it's just it really opens up a two-year window, you know. So I think in aggregate over the next 2 years, it's going to increase the number of wind shipments we're going to have, but exactly which quarters and stuff like that is hard to predict.
As you know, the PTC extension is a little different this time, Steve. It's the units will have to be in production by the end of the year, and that's yet to be defined.
Yeah.
But it's not the same as last year where they had to be actually operating. So that, yeah, you know, I think it's all good for 13 and 14.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thanks, yep. Steve.
The next question comes from the line of Shannon O'Callaghan, Nomura.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, Shannon.
Hey,
how are you?
Shannon.
Good. So just in terms of the, you know, back to the orders, FX and X-Wind being up 7, I mean, at the December meeting, I think you had said, you know, up a smidge, and this sounds better than a smidge. What finished stronger, I guess, in December than you thought at the meeting?
You know, Shannon, look, I think the there is a little bit of volatility, you know, going on out there. And, you know, we always try to give you guys a range of outcomes. You know, one of our biggest industrial businesses went from having orders down 24% in October to having orders up 27% in December, and the total being up, you know, 7% for the quarter. So that's a big swing. You know, that's a big swing. So I would say, Shannon, you know, on balance, we closed the quarter very strong. I would say all the businesses had good order books as we closed the quarter, probably above even what our expectations were. I think that's good news. You know, what that means, or is it lumpy or things like that, I think it's too soon to call victory, but clearly the momentum built during the quarter.
Okay, and healthcare was probably the biggest swing.
Yeah.
And you know, power and water margins. So you're saying ex-wind, they were up 300 bips. I mean, the wind mix should be actually favorable from here. I mean, but that seems like an awfully high year-over-year run rate. So I mean, are there things that prevent us from continuing to track at that kind of a rate?
Well, the services business had a great quarter. You know, so we really, you know, a lot of what we've talked about in terms of services, you know, kind of, I'd say fourth quarter was fantastic. And, you know, there's the mix for the business ought to be great for better for 2013. So, you know, we'll just see how the shipments work and all that stuff. But
you look at 2012. I mean, wind revenue was up close to 50%, and you know, the margins are down a couple points, and they're already below average for the company. So this had a huge 20 basis point impact on the total year on the total company. And I think as you go into 2013, you're going to have a couple $1 billion less of wind revenue. So we do expect that to be a positive. I don't know if you get the full 20 basis points, and we'll have to see how the PTC impacts that, but it will be a net positive versus what we certainly saw in 2012, Shannon.
Okay, and then just, you know, your M&A, you know, plans have been fairly modest, but if you get NBCU proceeds sort of, you know, sooner than the base plan, I mean, are there enough things out there that, you know, you see opportunities to redeploy very quickly into industrial deals, or would you look for something else to do with the cash?
You know, Shannon, I just don't even want to speculate on, you know, how that plays out. I think, you know, we've talked about balance and discipline, capital allocation. I think that's really the way I feel. We like having a good yield. You know, we like the fact that we returned more than $12 billion of cash to shareholders last year. We like having, you know, kind of a focused approach to, you know, to acquisitions. And, you know, if our world changes, we'll come back and talk more about it. But for right now, you shouldn't assume any change.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Good. Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Julian Mitchell, Credit Suisse.
Hi, thanks a lot.
Hey, Julian.
Hey, so my first question is really just on the value gap. I mean, you mentioned it's not really lumpy, but, you know, if I look at your mid-December presentation, you had a double plus from value gap as a margin driver in the 13. Today it's a single plus. I just wondered if that was because of something like healthcare pricing and the quarter being worse than you thought in orders, or what drove that?
No, I think it's still, you know, there's really no change in how I feel about value gap for next year. You know, it's good, solid, 330 this year. It'll be better than that next year.
And I think if you look at orders pricing overall, you look at our total orders price index, you know, for the company, it's been positive all year long in 2012 in total. It was a positive half a point, 50 basis points in the fourth quarter, and for the total year it's positive 60 basis points. So I don't think, you know, I think pricing has not been a change in our view.
Yeah.
We continue to see strong growth.
Well, Julian, we think it's going to be above 12.
Okay, got it. And then secondly, you know, in mid-December you talked about 5% services revenue growth in 2013. You know, if I just look at the orders in services, you know, they were down 2 year-on-year in Q2, down 4 year-on-year in Q3, flat in Q4. So are you still comfortable with that 5% services revenue growth for 13, just given that the orders haven't been that strong for 9 months or so?
You know, Julian, these are lumpy. You know, the orders here are probably lumpier than others, you know, particularly with the CSA. So I would say we have a huge backlog. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, our estimate of 5% organic revenue growth in services really assumes that aviation spares has a better 2013. You know, so I think, you know, the combination of the fact that you've got $157 billion backlog, sometimes what goes into orders are 10 or 15 years of commitments, right? So those go based on shop visits and stuff like that we can model that makes us feel good about it. And some pieces really, you know, we're expecting aviation spares to bounce back. And that's, you know, those two things, I think, really lead you to 5% service organic growth.
You look, you know, we had 4% revenue this year with aviation flat, and Jeff's point is really one of the key differences what we expect in 2013 on aviation.
Got it, thanks. And then just lastly, on gas turbine shipments for 13, I'm thinking they should be down maybe around 10% or so year on year. Does that sound about right?
You know, basically, right now, if you look, we had 108 orders for the year. We're forecasting somewhere around 100 gas turbines for 2013. And, you know, we'll see how the market market plays out. So they're going to be down versus 2012. I think the factors to think about, the thermal business itself on the equipment side is, you know, is about 9% of the op profit for the energy business. So really the dynamic for us is going to be, you know, how do services perform? We got a big growth forecast in for services. How does distributed energy perform? We've got a nice orders performance in the quarter, and we've got a good outlook for 2013. And how do they do on controlling their costs? Those are going to be really the dynamics that the energy team is going to be working their way through.
And the megawatts will be bigger.
Megawatts
are bigger. The unit mix is higher on that.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Julian.
Yep. Your next question comes from the line of Christopher Glynn, Oppenheimer.
Thanks. Good morning.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
So, you know, with backlog building nicely and orders better than expected as of December, I guess sort of the lowering of the organic growth in December, and that played out as you predicted. It was maybe a bit of an abrupt deferral of backlog conversion. Can you characterize how you see that unfolding from here? Does that tend to favor the first half, and where does that focus your bias in the 2 to 6% organic range?
Well, look, I don't want to change the necessarily the 2 to 6%, you know, Chris. What I would say is that the way we finished the year, the building of the backlog, I'd say the strength of orders makes us feel good about next year and makes us feel good about the momentum we have going into next year. And then the only thing I'd add to that vis-a-vis organic growth and how it splits, you know, again, we don't do single point estimates. It's just, you know, wind is lumpy, and wind is going to continue to be lumpy in the future. But if you take that out, you know, the rest of the company, I'd say you feel pretty good about where, you know, where we're positioned going into next year, and that, you know, you had pretty good data. Really, you had five of six businesses with what I would call robust order growth in the quarter from an industrial standpoint.
Okay. And then just one on GE Capital regarding the systematically important financial institution and the buffer needed for capital. Can you give any updates on the limitations on capital payout and, you know, with respect to if you're shrinking the balance sheet, is there any reason GE Capital would need to retain any earnings at some point in the future?
Well, it's a good question. You know, I think for us, what we have to make sure is that we're meeting what we need to have to be from a regulatory perspective and from a rating agency perspective and from a management perspective, safe and secure. We expect to be well capitalized in any scenario under Basel I or Basel III. We're going to meet the liquidity requirements that regulators have. You know, our objective is to be able to release capital as we continue to shrink the book, as you say, and continue to generate profitability. You know, for us, we think we're in pretty good shape on that. You saw our success in 2012. You know, we've got number one, strong earnings. Number two, we have strong liquidity with over $60 billion of cash. Less than $35 billion of long-term debt we're going to issue this year, and we already completed nine of that. We have strong capital ratios. You saw we ended the year with a Tier 1 Common at 10.2 on Basel I. We reduced our overall debt by over $45 billion last year. We've got strong portfolio quality. Delinquencies are down. Non-earnings are down. And we continue to make strategic progress on running off the red assets and reinvesting in the green assets. So I think, you know, when we look at what's going on from a regulatory perspective, we have not been designated as a systemically important institution yet. We are in discussions. And the main issue that happens when you are designated is that you're going to be supervised by the Federal Reserve, and we're already supervised by the Federal Reserve. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out, but we believe that we have a pretty good framework against the regulatory guideposts, and we're continuing to operate in a way that runs the company from a safe and secure perspective while also being able to be mindful of returning cash back to the parent and get that back to investors. So, I think we're doing a pretty good job of this. I think Mike Neal and his team had a great year against those objectives, and we'll have to see how that continues to play out.
Thanks, Keith.
Yep.
Next question comes from the line of John Inch, Deutsche Bank.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, John.
Good morning, John.
Morning, guys. Lots of moving parts between the segments and the results versus the outlook and orders and pricing. Can you just, is there any way to do a little bit of a quick recap in terms of pricing, particularly in thermal, but maybe you could parse that between gas turbine or just some of the other segments, Keith or Jeff, that are noteworthy? Just what different about fourth quarter pricing in backlog, specifically on orders, versus what you saw last quarter?
Well, if you look in third quarter, power and water pricing in total was down 1.9.
Yep.
And in the fourth quarter, it's down 0.2. I said thermal, including services, went from a negative 2.7 in third quarter to a positive 1 in fourth quarter.
Yep.
Wind was down 3.6 in the third quarter. It's up 0.4 in the fourth quarter on fewer orders, obviously. So those are some of the bigger pieces. Oil and gas, third quarter 1.6, positive pricing, fourth quarter 1.3 on high orders. Aviation, continued positive pricing, 2.3% positive in both third and fourth quarter. And healthcare continues to have the, negative pricing, 1.7 in third, 1.8 in the fourth quarter. So overall, we went from a tenth of a point positive price in the third quarter to half a percent, 0.5, 50 basis points positive in the fourth quarter. And it's a big area, focus area, obviously, is the whole team is working on improving margins. And I think they've got some pretty good traction here. I think the supply-demand characteristics are what they are by business. But overall, for the portfolio, to have a half a point of positive price is a good place for us to be as we leave fourth quarter.
Yeah, no, I agree. And is the thermal price that you're getting, is that mix, or are you actively trying to raise pricing? Or what's going on there?
I think thermal pricing is lumpy. I would take it for the whole year, a half a percent up with equipment and services. That's kind of the way we look. We were expecting it to be flat to slightly positive for the year. Steve Bull said it was going to be a little lumpy, and,
yep.
I think that's about where we are. Obviously, with the market where it is, the supply-demand characteristics are tougher in thermal. On the other hand, you look at oil and gas and the supply chain tightening, where they're better in there and they're better in aviation. So I think it varies by business, but overall, we hit what Steve said a little better for the total year on thermal, a half a point up.
Hey Jeff, with the eventual monetization of NBC and Capital's equity investments and Redline assets that are going to come off, your company between that and operating cash is going to throw off an awful lot of cash flow over the coming years. Would you be able to reaffirm your commitment sort of not to be doing big deals, or anything beyond 1 to 3? EVO is a little bit bigger, but it's still in the zone. Or, are you thinking about perhaps, in a year or so, perhaps stepping that up? Or how should we think about that at this juncture?
Steve, again, I would make two comments. I just think I don't really want to make any other pronouncements other than, kind of disciplined and balanced capital allocation. So I just really, we'll go over the other bridges as we get there, but let's start with that. And the second thing I'd reaffirm, your first point, I think, is one that's good for all investors to remember is, this company is going to have a ton of cash over the next 3 years, right? Between whatever happens with NBC Universal, between, kind of, as we look at where we think GE Capital is versus the guidepost Keith talked about, there is going to be a lot of cash. So let's leave it at that. Let's leave it with those two comments for right now, John.
That's okay, and I'm often confused with Steve, so no worries. Thank you.
Okay.
The next question comes from the line of Nigel Coe, Morgan Stanley.
Thanks. Good morning.
Hey, Nigel.
So speaking of the ton of cash you just mentioned, Jeff, when do you expect to have sign off for the capital allocation plan for GE Capital? Are you on the same schedule as the banks, which I think they stress test results are out in March?
Yeah, Nigel, we're not one of the major banks that goes through that systemic process every year. We do go through our own process. I would say it's the best outlook would be to think of it as a mirror of 2012. And, we will go through a lot of the exact same steps with forecasts and stress tests and capital plans and all that. But, you know, last year we had final decisions on that in the second quarter, and I would anticipate it would be the same in 2013 right now.
Okay, that's helpful. And then switching back to December, it seems that December came in stronger than your initial thoughts back in the annual meeting. Anything stand out in terms of regions, U.S. versus growth markets versus Europe? Any one region stand out in terms of that ramp up in December?
You know, we saw a little bit of strength in the U.S. I'd say in healthcare and appliances. And then we saw a ton of strength elsewhere, I'd say Nigel, and we saw that in oil and gas and aviation energy,
yep,
really across the board. So, again, I think it fits the broader, it fits the broader, I'd say, dialogue, and that, you know, we kind of think the growth markets will continue to grow in 13. And, you know, when I think about the U.S., you've got a slow and steady housing recovery that I think is very positive, and then there's still a lot of fiscal uncertainty, and how those blend through into a U.S. GDP in 2013, we'll see.
Okay, okay. And then just finally on getting the MetLife deal done, how does that deposit base impact your flexibility and optionality with regard to PLCC?
Well, we'll see. I think a diversified funding base is good. In that regard, right now, we already, in that business, a lot of it is already financed by deposits, alternative funding, and securitization. So now we've got a kind of a different kind of deposits, more internet bank deposits. And at the end of the day, having more diversified funding, I think, does give more flexibility for future activity. You know, we don't have any of that going on right now, but I think just from having a more diversified funding base, you would have more optionality.
Okay, very helpful. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Brian Langenberg, Langenberg & Company.
Good morning,
hey, guys.
Brian.
Morning, Brian. Morning, Jeff. Just a couple things. I'll do a bunch of follow-ups later. Just review for us briefly your total exposure to 787. Obviously, this is transitional or transitory. And then secondly, in terms of the power cycle, I mean, I think we're pretty much looking for a 2014 overall upturn, but how are you thinking about potentially what the impact is on that cycle from what I would call demand management, either companies making their buildings 20% more efficient or using grid to make, if you're a utility, using your grid to make your existing generation capacity, let's call it an ops management for utilities, if you will. Just if we could address those two things.
I'll take a shot at the aviation first, and then you can talk about energy maybe. If you think about 787 exposure, we obviously have inventory. Our plan for 2013, we shipped 113 GEnx engines in 12. Our plan would be to ship 200 engines. So, we'll see where Boeing goes with that. As I said, we haven't had any changes to the demand production schedule from Boeing on that yet. And a bunch of those engines are on the 747 as well. So, for us, I think, if there's a push out of some engines in the first quarter, we may have a little more inventory, and having less engines in rev rec may be a slight positive for margins. I mean, I don't really know the difference between what we're going to do this year versus what we did in the first quarter last year until we get finalized with Boeing. But I don't see a material impact on this on us at all. As I said, the engines are performing extremely well. So, we feel good. The customers love this plane. They've had a ton of positive feedback, and Boeing has to work through this issue, and they will work through it. We're confident of that.
I would echo again. I would echo what Keith said. I think this is an immensely popular airplane, fuel efficient. Passengers like it. Airlines like it. So we're here to support Boeing wherever it goes on the Dreamliner. On energy, I think Brian, we already factor in the fact that there's going to be an impact on demand side management on demand for electricity. And you factor that into, I think, an overall health of the gas portfolio vis-a-vis what happens with nuclear, what happens with the EPA, and then, demand growth in places like Saudi Arabia, Algeria, places like that, that still remains, I think, intact. So, we try to factor that all in, but we also do factor in energy management, but we also benefit from that in our energy management business.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Great.
It looks like your final question will come from the line of Daniel Holland, Morningstar.
Hi there, good morning.
Hey, Daniel.
How are you, Dan?
Just curious, what was pushing the industrial CFOA number down, I guess, about 2% year over year, just considering the profit growth and the overall business this year?
Yeah, really the biggest dynamic for us, Daniel, was in the wind business. The wind business had significant progress collections in prior periods, and in total, the wind business was a drag on working capital in 2012 of about $1.5 billion. So, you know, the rest of the businesses with their earnings growth and the management of working capital were able to overcome that. And then, as you know, we had about $400 million of pension funding that we did that we didn't have any in 2011. So that $400 million was also part of the V. But the biggest driver for us on working capital as a drag in the year was wind, and the businesses overcame that.
Got you. And one last one. And just thinking about margins for next year and kind of the simplification strategy that you guys have identified, if you think about it on a segment-by-segment basis, I mean, where are the biggest opportunities that you guys see and kind of which ones are, you know, might have already had the biggest benefit from simplification so far?
It's pretty broadly across the company, Daniel. We have every one of our teams working on lowering their structure, so having more consolidated, higher-level P&Ls. We have everybody participating and putting their back offices into centers of excellence and more shared services across the company. And we have a common IT initiative across the company to reduce our general ledger and enterprise resource planning systems that is pretty much across the portfolio. So everybody's participating. Everybody has cost targets, and it's pretty broadly based.
We've got a lot of good restructuring projects that are a year and a half, or 2 year paybacks, and so,
yep.
You know, we're lined up, and we think we can keep the structural costs keep going down as a percentage of revenue. You know, our target is to really accelerate that.
Great, thanks.
All right.
So, Trevor, you know, thanks to everybody. I think the team feels really good about how we did on delivering our commitments in 2012. We've identified very clearly our 2013 commitments, which we believe are very competitive against our peers, and we're going to be off executing against that going forward.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. Just to wrap up for everyone, the replay of today's webcast will be available this afternoon on our website. We'll be distributing our quarterly supplemental data schedule for GE Capital shortly after this call. Just the one announcement, our first quarter 2013 earnings webcast will be on Friday, April 19th for your calendars. As always, we'll be available today to take questions. Thank you, everyone.
This concludes your conference call. Thank you for your participation today. You may now disconnect.